This is the summary of The Richest Man in Babylon by bestbookbriefings.com. The Richest Man in Babylon. The Success Secrets of the Ancients. The most inspiring book on wealth ever written by George S. Clason. Part 1. The Man Who Desired Gold. Ban-Sir, a chariot builder in Babylon, was discouraged. He sat on his property's wall, looking sadly at this simple home, and at the workshop where his half-finished chariot sat. Even though he knew that money was getting tight, and that he should get back to work, he still sat, his mind struggling to find a solution to a problem. Engrossed in thought, Ban-Sir was surprised by the sound of a twanging lyre, a lyre that belonged to his best friend Kobe the musician. Kobe smiled, and greeted him. "It looks like business has been good for you, my friend," Kobe said. "Since it looks like you don't need to be working right now, might I ask that you lend me 2 shekels? "If I had 2 shekels, Ban-Sir replied sadly, "I wouldn't be able to lend them to you because that would be all I had. I'm all out of money." "If you're broke, then why not work?" Kobe asked. "Is something the matter? The gods must be tormenting me," Ban-Sir said. "I had a dream in which I was a wealthy man. My purse was full to bursting with coins. Enough coins to toss to the beggars, to buy nice things for me and my wife, and to make feel sure of the future. I was so content. When I woke up and remembered how poor I really was, I suddenly felt rebellious," Ban-Sir exclaimed. "We live in Babylon, the richest city in the world. Why then, after half a lifetime's worth of hard work, are we both still barely able to afford our own needs? For years, I worked to build the finest chariots, hoping someday the gods would recognize my deeds and bless me. Now, I realize they never will. Why can't we have our share of good things?" Kobe agreed. "Just today," he said, "I saw our old friend Arkad, riding by in his golden chariot. He's supposed to be the richest man in Babylon, so rich that even the king asks for his advice regarding the treasury." This gave Ban-Sir an idea. "It costs nothing to ask for wise advice from a good friend. Let's go to Arkad and ask how we can become rich like him. Let's bring our other childhood friends, none of which have done any better than us. That way, we can all share in Arkad's wisdom." Part 2. The Richest Man in Babylon. In Babylon lived a very rich man named Arkad, who was known not only for his great wealth, but also his generosity. He was generous to charity, to his family, and himself. Nevertheless, he grew richer every year, his wealth increasing faster than he could spend it. One day, his childhood friends came to him for advice. "Arkad, you are the richest man in Babylon while we struggled to get by. When we were young, though, we were equals. We studied under the same master, and played the same games. We have been as honorable as you, worked as hard and as faithful as you. Why then should fate choose you to enjoy all these good things?" "Fate," Arkad replied, "is a vicious goddess who brings no permanent good. In fact, unearned gold ruins almost every man it touches. They become careless spenders, who quickly lose all their money, leaving them with desires they can no longer satisfy. If not that, others become misers, hoarding their wealth in the fear that they will lose it, living empty and miserable lives." His friends admitted that this was true. "When I was young, I saw all the good things that brought happiness and contentment," Arkad continued. "I realized that wealth made all these good things better. Wealth is power. With it, many things are possible. When I realized this, I decided to make something of myself. However, as you know, I do not come from a rich family, and I am not particularly powerful or wise. In order to achieve this, I needed time to study. After all, did our master not teach us that there were 2 kinds of learning? One for the things we learn, and the other to find out what we don't know. I found a job as a scribe in the Hall of Records. For months I worked, with no real profit to show. One day, Algamish, the money lender, ordered a copy of the 9th law. I worked hard, but the law was long, and I did not finish it in time. When Algamish returned, I asked for his advice for becoming rich. In return, I spent all night working on the copy until it was done. This was his advice to me: I found the road to wealth when I decided that a part of all I earned was mine to keep. Is that it? I asked. Isn't all I earn mine to keep already? Of course not, the moneylender replied. Can you live in Babylon without spending? You pay for the things you eat, for your clothes and sandals. Fool, you pay everyone but yourself. You might as well just be a slave. Save no less than a tenth of what you earn, no matter how small it is. Pay yourself first. Ensure an income for your future. Money can work for you, and earn you more money in the process. Wealth, like a tree, grows from a tiny seed. The sooner you plant your seed, the sooner that tree will grow. And when you do choose to invest your money, make sure that you seek people who have experience in what you are asking advice about. Don't trust a bricklayer to tell you about gems. That said, enjoy life while you can. Don't try to save beyond what you can. Live according to your income, and don't let yourself become a miser. And sir, Algamish's advice was passed on to Arkad, who passed it on to them. Part 3. 7 Cures for a Lean Purse. Babylon's glory endures through the ages. Its reputation still stands as one of the richest of cities. However, it wasn't always so. Babylon's riches were a result of its people's wisdom. King Sargon was once faced with a difficult situation. His country enjoyed many years of prosperity because of the great irrigation canals and temples he had built. Now that these works were completed, it seemed that his people were no longer able to support themselves. The laborers had few jobs. The merchants had few customers, the farmers unable to sell their produce. All of a sudden, it seemed like the gold had disappeared. But where to? It had found its way, his chancellor reported, into the hands of a few very rich men. The money quickly filtered through our people and straight to them. Shouldn't all of our people learn how to become wealthy? The king demanded. Who is the richest man in Babylon? Bring him before me. The following day, Arkad appeared before the king and offered his services as a teacher. 100 men were selected to be taught 7 cures to fatten any man's purse. 1. For every 10 coins, spend only 9. 2. Control your expenses so that you have enough to pay for your necessities and enjoyments. 3. Put your money to work, making them reproduce into a constant stream of wealth. 4. Guard your treasure, make safe investments, and consult with wise men. 5. Own your home in full. It will reduce your cost of living and gratify you and your family. 6. Provide in advance for your old age and the protection of your family. 7. Study and become wiser. Increase your learning so that you might better accomplish these 7 cures. Part 4. Meet the goddess of good luck. Everyone wants to be lucky. As with the men of ancient Babylon, it is when men today. Is there some way to attract the favor of the goddess of good luck? In the Temple of Learning in Babylon, in Arkad's own special hall, such a discussion once took place. One member of the discussion shared that to his luck, he found a purse with gold in it. In his curiosity, he wanted to know if there was a way to continue attracting such luck. An interesting idea, Arkad said. To start our discussion, let's hear from the others who have also run across a bag of gold, gems, or other valuable treasures. No one answered. This luck must be rare indeed, he said. Where should we look for this luck, then? Perhaps the gambling tables, a young man suggested. What reason would the goddess of luck have to take interest in any man's bet? I look to find her in places where the doings of men are more worthwhile. In tilling the soil, in honest trading, there's always a chance to make a profit on a man's efforts, if he perseveres. The odds are in his favor. But when he plays the games, the situation is reversed. The chance to profit is always in favor of the gamekeeper. That's the way the game is arranged, for it is his business. Even so, some men do win large sums, one of the listeners said. So they do, Arkad conceded, but does the money gained from such an endeavor bring permanent value? I know many successful men in Babylon, yet I am unable to name a single one who started their success from such. Can you? At this, there was a silence. If no one else, he continued, then what about yourselves? This was answered by a series of groans and laughter. Consider then, our trades and business. when we have a profitable transaction, should we consider it as good luck, or the proper reward for our efforts? If we take credit for our business's successes, an old merchant volunteered, then why not consider the successes we almost enjoyed, but escaped us? If they had actually come to be, would you not call that good luck? When I was a young man, my father strongly urged me to enter an investment. It would have required an investment of a tenth of all of my earnings. Surely, my father encouraged, opportunity stands before you. Do not hesitate like I did when I was young. In spite of his advice, I did hesitate. If I agreed to pay for the enterprise, it would deprive my wife and I of certain pleasures. I delayed making the decision until it was much too late, and the business proved to be much more profitable than anyone could have expected. That tale shows that good luck waits for the man who accepts opportunity, a man from the desert commented. Had you taken this chance when you were young, then today you would be blessed with many more pleasures of the world. A procrastinator, one might call you. No wonder opportunity fled. To attract good luck, it is necessary to take action and take advantage of the opportunity. Part 5. The 5 Laws of Gold. 1. Gold comes gladly to any man who saves one-tenth of his earnings for his and his family's future. 2. Gold works diligently for the wise owner who finds it employment. 3. Gold clings to the protection of the cautious owner who invests it wisely. 4. Gold slips away from the man who invests it in businesses with which he is unfamiliar or ill-advised with. 5. Gold flees from the man who forces it to chase impossible earnings or follows the advice of tricksters and schemers. Part 6. The Gold Lender of Babylon. 50 gold pieces. Never before had Rodin, a spear maker from Babylon, carried so much gold in his pocket. With every step, the coins clinked in his pocket, making beautiful music. 50 pieces, all his own. What power! What then should he use them for? As he walked home, he could think of nothing he wanted to own more than the gold itself. Some days later, he entered the shop of Mathan, a lender of gold and dealer in jewels and rare cloths. He sought not gold, but advice. "Rare is the man who seeks me for advice," Mathan exclaimed. "Sit, and I will have brought for you much food and my largest cup." "What troubles you?" "The king's gift," Rodin answered. He was pleased with the design I submitted for the new spears of the royal guard, so he rewarded me with 50 pieces of gold. Every hour of the day, men come and ask to share my fortune with me. "That is only natural," the lender said. "More men want gold than have it. Can you not simply say no?" "To many I can," Rodin said, "but sometimes it would be easier to say yes. Can one so easily refuse one's own sister? She wants a loan so that her husband might become a prosperous merchant." "You bring up a worthy subject, my friend," Mathan said. "Gold brings responsibility and a new position. It brings fear and yet power. It brings opportunities. Have you ever heard of the farmer of Nineveh who could speak with animals? He would linger in the farm every evening just to listen to them. One night, he heard the ox complaining to the donkey about how hard his life was. "No matter how hot the day, or how tired I am, I must work from morning until night. You, however, only have to carry our master wherever he wishes. When he doesn't travel, all you do is rest." The donkey sympathized with the ox. "Here's what you can do to have a day off. Tomorrow morning, lie on the ground and groan, so that they might say you are sick and cannot work." The ox took the donkey's advice, and the next day the farmer's slave reported that he was sick and could not pull the plow. "Then hitch the donkey to the plow," the farmer said. The donkey, who had only wanted to help his friend, was then forced to work all day. When the evening came, his heart was bitter and his legs were weary. This ended the friendship between the donkey and the ox. Can you tell the moral of the story, Rodin? If you desire to help your friend, do so in a way that will not bring your friend's burdens upon you. It's a wise moral, Rodin admitted. But you lend to many men. Do they always repay you? At this, Mathan smiled. The lender needs to be wise, judging carefully if his gold will serve a useful purpose and return to him, or be wasted. Let me show you something. Mathan produced a chest. From every person I lend money to, I ask for a token, to be placed here until their debt is paid. If they never do, the token remains here, as a reminder of someone who was not faithful to my trust. The safest loans are to those whose possessions are worth more than what they desire. Sometimes the tokens given to me are worth more than the loan I give them. In this, I am assured that my gold will be returned. In another class are those who have the ability to earn. Like you, if they are honest and are not unfortunate, I know they will also be able to repay their loans. There are, of course, those who have neither property or income. For the loans I give them, sometimes my token box will remind me of them for years to come. You see, gold is a money lender's merchandise. It is easy to lend, but it can be difficult to get back. A wise lender looks not for risk, but for a guaranteed, safe payment. It is good to help those in trouble, but help must be given wisely, lest we take others' burdens upon ourselves. If you preserve your treasure, it will produce earnings that will be a source of pleasure for the rest of your days. If you let it escape, it will be a source of constant regret and sorrow. Read the message I have carved on the lid of my token chest. It applies both to the borrower and the lender. Better a little caution than a great regret. Part 7. The Walls of Babylon. Banzar, old guard of Babylon, stood watch at the passageway that led to the top of the walls that defended it. Above, valiant men were battling for the future of the great city and all of its citizens. The sounds of battle poured through the walls, the yelling of many men, the trampling of thousands of horses. The mighty Assyrians had caught him off guard. The main armies of Babylon were away with the king, far away in the east on another expedition. The defending forces were small, but the walls had to hold, or Babylon was doomed. Banzar had the vantage point. He was closest to the conflict, and the first to hear of each new update. Around him crowded great crowds of citizens, terrified and eager to hear news of the battle. He turned them all away, with stoic encouragements of the strength of their gates and their men. They had nothing to fear. Day after day Banzar stood there, watching reinforcements come up the walls and come back down, either dead or wounded. Around him, the citizens became more crowded and more frightened. To all he gave the same answer: the walls of Babylon will protect you. The attack went on for weeks. Grimmer and grimmer was Banzar as the passage he guarded grew slick with blood, sticky with mud by the men who staggered ever upwards and downwards. Every day, the slain attackers piled up in heaps by the wall. Every night, they were carried back and buried. On the fourth week, the noise of battle grew silent. A mighty shout went up from the defenders. It was repeated by the waiting troops, echoed by the citizens, sweeping over the city like a storm. The walls of Babylon had once again repulsed a vicious foe. Babylon endured the centuries because it was fully protected. They were an excellent example of man's need for protection. It is just as strong today, but we have developed wider and better plans. Behind the walls of insurance, saving accounts, and dependable investments, we can guard ourselves against unexpected tragedy. Part 8. The Camel Trader of Babylon. The hungrier one is, the clearer one's mind works. For 2 days, Tarkad had eaten nothing except 2 small figs that he had stolen from a garden. In fear of being punished, he left the market and paced in front of the eating house. Maybe he would meet someone he knew, someone he could borrow some money from, and then, food. Distracted by his thoughts, he ran into the one man he wanted to avoid, Debasir the camel trader. Of everyone Tarkad had borrowed money from, Debasir made him the most uncomfortable because of his failure to repay his debts. "Tarkad," Debasir said, his face lighting up, "just the boy I've been looking for. I could make great use of the money I lent you today, 2 pieces of copper and the silver piece I lent you before. What do you say?" "I am very sorry," Tarkad mumbled. "Today I have neither. Ill fortune pursues me so that I cannot repay anyone. Ill fortune," Debasir exclaimed. "Would you blame the gods for your own weakness? Come with me while I eat. I would tell you a story." When they entered, Debasir ordered for himself a fat goat's leg, and nothing for Tarkad but a jug of water. Tarkad's heart sank, but he said nothing. Debasir, however, began to tell him a tale. The men in the eating house gathered around him, eager to listen. "This is a story of how I became a camel trader. Did anyone here know that I used to be a slave in Syria? When I was a young man, I was a saddle maker. I was not greatly skilled, so I earned just enough to support myself and my wife. I craved good things that I could not afford, so I indulged and bought luxuries beyond my means. Eventually, my debts piled up, and my creditors began to pursue me. Life became miserable. I borrowed from my friends, but I couldn't repay them either. My wife returned to her father, and I decided to leave Babylon, in search of another city. For 2 years I worked for caravan traders, and then fell in with robbers. On our first raid, we found success, and immediately squandered the loot. The second time, we were attacked. Our leaders were killed, and the rest of us were taken to Damascus to be made slaves. The master who bought me brought me to his wives, and told them they could make me a eunuch. Syra, the first wife, spoke up. "We have plenty of eunuchs, but no decent camel tenders. Ask this slave if he can lead a camel." Eagerly, I replied that I could, and would do so the best of my ability. From that day on, I was turned over to her, to lead her camel whenever she visited her sick mother. I would tell her that I was not born a slave, but as the son of a freeman, an honorable saddle maker. What she said in reply disturbed me. "How can you call yourself a freeman when your own weakness has led you to this? If a man has a soul of a slave, will he not become one no matter his birth? If a man has the soul of a free man, will he not become respected as such despite his misfortune? Do you have the desire to repay your debts in Babylon?" Syra asked. "If you let the years slip by with no effort to repay, then you have the soul of a slave. A man who cannot repay his debts cannot respect himself. If you wish to prove otherwise, then fight. Doesn't your great king fight his enemies with all his strength? Your debts are your enemies. They drove you out of Babylon, you left him alone, and they became too strong for you. Now look where it's gotten you. A year later, I would find my chance for freedom. On a regular trip to Syra's mother, she urged me to prove that I was a free man, giving me her camels and supplies to escape. I did not know which way home was, but I struck out bravely across the desert. All day and night I rode, urged by the fear of capture. I arrived at a harsh country, all thorns and rocks that bruised my camel's feet. Day after day we forged ahead, until our food and water ran out. At the end of the ninth day, I fell off the back of my steed, sure that I was too weak, that I would surely die here, in the middle of the wastes. Yet in my hunger, my mind was clearer than it had ever been. Once more, the question came to me: did I have the soul of a slave, or of a free man? If I was a slave, then I would give up and die, a fitting end. But if I was a free man, surely I would force my way back to Babylon, and repay the people who had trusted me. Syra had spoken the truth. My debts were my enemies. Why had I refused to stand my ground like a man? Die in the desert, not I. With renewed vision and strength, I struggled to my feet, and rode once again. We pushed on, and found the trail back home. Where a slave whines, a free man sees a series of problems to be solved. What about you, Tarkad? Does your empty stomach clear your mind? Are you ready to take the road back to self-respect? Tears came to the young man's eyes. He rose eagerly, and agreed. But how did you find your way back home? One of the listeners asked. Where determination is, Debasir declared, the way can be found. Part 9. The Clay Tablets of Babylon. A series of tablets outlining Debasir's business ventures on the quest to repay all of his debts, as detailed by an exchange of letters between Professor Franklin Caldwell of Nottingham University and Alfred Shrewsbury, an archaeologist. The letters also recount how Debasir's advice would go on to help Alfred and his wife out of debt. Whether you prefer to read or listen, we have something for you. Visit Best Book Briefings for more.